Harry. Everybody, so please help yourself. We don't want stuff to go back, otherwise they say it's wasteful expenditure. As you know, today is the medium-term budget statement that the minister will produce in the House, so we don't want to waste anything. Tomorrow, Mineral Resources will say, but the committee is accusing us of wasteful expenditure, but look how they are wasting. So please help yourself, ladies and gentlemen, and then we'll give you 2 minutes, if that is fine with the department. 2 minutes. To just let people help themselves, and then we'll start. Ladies and gentlemen, members, colleagues, you see I'm not so chirpy this morning because Ajax got a good rubbing and the Cape Cobras lost, so sport was very bad, sport was not so kind to the Western Cape this weekend and the week, but I believe there is no Golden Arrow supporters here, so that makes it much more happy. The two that we've got here are Amazulu supporters. So we will start with introducing ourselves. I'm going to start from my right around the table, and don't be shy. Feel free. I want the department to be relaxed. There will be some tough questions, there will be some robust interaction, but relax. Just answer your natural way. You don't have to be on your nerves. Go back to Pretoria to say, you, those bums from the select committee are very cruel. No, relax. Relax. Just relax now. So I'll start from my right. My name is, all right, let me introduce everybody first. Let everybody introduce them first, and I'll be the last.
I'm Tumsan Kamet. I come from the province where Lamontville Golden Arrow comes from.
Alf Lee's from the same province and the same soccer team, the one that beat the other team. I don't know where the other team came from, but the other team got beaten.
From Limpopo.
I'm Elsa van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
I'm Shiri Chen from Gauteng.
Kenneth Sinclair from the Northern Cape.
Colin Mahina Mapas.
Morning, everybody. Chomo Nyambi from Mpumalanga province.
Bafunani Aaron Ngweni, Free State.
Mthokozi Sizondi, Regional Operations Manager from PMR.
David Mtsiza, Regional Operations Manager from the Mineral Resources Department. Thank you.
Joseph Katenga, Chief Compliance Officer, PMR.
And I'm Thandeka Zoom from the PPG Corporate Services from the DME stroke R.
Morning. I'm Edson Lagimana, the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Siabonga Ndabezi Pensane, Chief Director.
Good morning, Siabonga Ndabezitha is the name, Chief Director, Mineral Promotion, Department of Mineral Resources.
Good morning, I'm Grace Nizulu, the Committee Secretary.
Yeah, my name is Freddy Adams, from Western Cape. As you could heard our name, Honorable Lee, Ajax Cape Town. So you didn't hide it. But also chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development, which comprises three departments. It's got oversight over three departments: economic development, mineral resources, and energy. Now, today we've got mineral resources, the DG, has he made an apology? Can anybody?
Listen, I was going to make the apologies on his behalf.
Excuse me?
I was saying, Chair, I was going to make the apology when I start talking. The DG, unfortunately, is chairing the INTEC, which is the bilateral between ourselves and Russia at the moment here in Cape Town. Yes. And unfortunately, he has with him our DG for mineral resources. Is with him. And we're expecting one of the chief directors from Mineral Resources to join us. She has flown in from Pretoria. So she'll be joining us. She's on her way from the airport right now.
No, it's not that we are questioning your competency. We know you are competent and capable people. It's just that we, you know, we like to see the head of the department also. But his apology is accepted in my view, as he is busy with very serious negotiations in South Africa and Russia. So, we can tell the DG that the policy is accepted in terms of that. And as I said, we are not questioning your capabilities or your competencies. As I know, Brady there is a very capable and competent person, as well as Mr. Katanga. And everybody, I've seen you guys in action at your strategic planning workshop. And your inputs and your questions and everything that you did there was very focused, sharp, disciplined, and that I must say, honourable members, I have seen them for 3 days in action, so they are very sharp. So they'll produce a sharp report for us today, precise, I think, to the to the T, also with our interaction with David. It was always to the T, and the treatment that we've received from them as a committee, even on our oversight as well, it was very, very, very good. So if anybody's got anything else to say, I'm going to hand over to, I don't know who's going to do the presentation, Chief Director, is it DDG? DDG, to the DDG, and seems to me there's no one DDG was that wants to block your way, so the road is open for you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I really have to reiterate our apology on behalf of the DDG and the other DDGs. Unfortunately, we are very thin as a department at the moment. Much as we are still one department, you are servicing two ministers. So we really have a situation where you have to support each and every minister. So DDGs are running around a lot. In fact, right now, there's not a single DDG in the office. I was the only one that was left. Chairperson, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go through, I don't know if it's been circulated, the speaking notes, which is what would have been the DDG's presentation, which he had prepared. I'm just going to go through that presentation. And then once I'm done, then the individual representatives from each of the branches will do their independent presentations. That is for their specific branches. I will also, in my presentation, go through the branch of corporate services, which I'm responsible for. So if I may, with your permission, just start with what our presentation is going to be looking like, the presentation outline. I will firstly start talking about, okay, we've already introduced the community team, which has, of course, changed now in terms of what is on the presentation at the moment. I will go through the overall introduction, which is the accounting officer's overall introduction, which specifically just look at the highlights of the annual report. We have not taken everything into detail in this presentation, but just mainly the highlight issues that he wanted to highlight with you. We looked at the strategic objectives of the department, and if members will remember that we are talking about the strategic objectives of the Department of Minerals and Energy, not the Department of Mineral Resources, because the 2008-09 financial year, we were still Department of Minerals and Energy up until this year. We look at the financial information, the financial performance of the department. Briefly, the DDG's overview will make indications on that, and then our CFO here will go into details in terms of how we've performed financially. And then also briefly take you through our governance and audit report. Then that will be followed by the individual presentation. The DDG's overview or introduction is going to cover those 2, 4, 6 areas. It's going to cover the world economic downturn. It's going to talk about comment on the world economic downturn, on the mining industry growth, development, and employment task team, which is a task team that has formed by the department to address the current challenges of the economic downturn. It's going to talk about the mining charter. That is the review of the mining charter in terms of the requirements of the PMRDA. That is, we have been into the implementation of the PMRDA, MPRDA as since 2004. It's going to talk about the beneficiation strategy, what the department has done and what the strategy is all about. Briefly talk about the small-scale mining in the department, and then, of course, the presidential audit. The strategic objectives of the Department of Minerals and Energy, which combines the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy, we had 4 strategic objectives which have been in operation for the past 3 years before 2008. That was firstly to actively contribute towards sustainable development and growth, to redress past imbalances, looking at the promotion of broader participation in the mineral and energy sector, direct intervention in communities, and increased BE and SME participation. We'll also look at the regulation, to regulate at the minerals and energy sector to be healthier, cleaner, and safer, implementing the monitoring and maintenance of effective policies and relevant legislation to mining and energy sectors. And our last objective was to create an enabling environment for effective and efficient service delivery. So those are the strategic objectives which this annual report is based on in terms of our strategic planning at the beginning of the financial year. Before we go to the performance against budget, our financial performance, I just want to quickly go through the DG's overview. Chairperson of the Select Committee, honorable members, thank you for the opportunity to present to you the department's annual report for 2008-09. This annual report affords us the opportunity to account on the performance of the department pertaining to its mandate and its contribution towards a better life in relation to government's overarching objectives. Moreover, the annual report gives effect to the imperatives of accountability and transparency, values that are enshrined in our constitution, the supreme law and repository of the norms of the nation. As honorable members are aware, it was only in the current financial year, this is now in May 2009, when President Zuma announced his new cabinet and the restructuring of government and departments, where the Department of Mineral and Energy will be split into the Department of Energy and the Department of Mineral Resources. Therefore, as I've already mentioned, this annual report speaks to the performance review of the DME. During our presentation this morning, Line Function will be presenting on mineral resources branches only, and support services presentation will be combined for both the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy. Where possible, we'll make an indication of whether it's a split presentation or it's still combined. But some areas, it's a bit difficult to start splitting some of the things. For instance, we talk about support services. It's a bit difficult to split because we're using the same support service for both departments at the moment. Line Function is more specific because Line Function has been already been separated. There are branches that deal with mining issues, there are branches that deal with energy issues. So in that area, it's a bit easier to separate the two. Honourable members, one of the topical subjects for 2008-09 was the global financial crisis that South Africa was not immune to. The financial crisis dating to 2008 radically slowed down economies and in many cases caused recessions. Mining companies are still experiencing varying levels of difficulty, with some retrenching their employees while others have either closed down or been put under administration. One of the interventions introduced by the department as an attempt to address the impact of this crisis in the mining sector was the establishment of what we call the Mining Industry Growth, Development and Employment Task Team, which is the MISDEC. This is the forum that brings together government, the mining industry and labor around the table. Its main purpose is to mitigate the severity of the economic crisis in the mining industry and present interventions that can be applied over the medium to long term. This has already yielded some positive results, including containing the levels of cumulative retrenchment to below 25,000, contrary to the earlier forecast of more than 100,000 during the early part of the crisis. MISDEC has also been able to influence deferment of the royalty bill, obtain stakeholder support for the beneficiation strategy, initiate the development of a mining development agency, and also sought a commitment from companies to the mining regulatory compliance in its entirety. This intervention has also strengthened relationships among all stakeholders in working together to address the challenges as a collective. This task team of honorable members will continue operating post, hopefully, the downturn to look at how we face the economic challenges of the country forecasting with the mining industry. And their work is going to be very operational and more on the implementation side than other structures that we currently have within government. We are between government and the other stakeholders, that is the industry and labor. As members have already been aware, the mining charter is due for a review. The mining charter, which was the first charter to be introduced in the country, provides a platform for mining companies to give back to the communities among which they mine. The charter gives effect to the transformation objectives in the mining industry as outlined with the proclamation of the MPRCA. Honourable members, it has been 5 years since the promulgation of the MPRCA, and in terms of one of the conditions of the Act, the mining charter will be reviewed after 5 years. The provisions to review the charter are based on an agreement among all stakeholders. The department started during the year under review, that is 2008-2009, with the process of reviewing the charter. Significant progress has been made towards quantifying the charter's impact. Once the review has been completed, honorable members, the results of the review will be presented to Cabinet after which I'm made to understand this report down to the committees for discussion. So in the meantime, we're just in the process of finalizing our review. The beneficiation strategy launched on the 31st of March 2009 after approval was granted by Cabinet for the strategy to be circulated for broader consultation addresses the beneficiation of strategic minerals such as your gold, the platinum group metals, chrome, iron ore, manganese, and heavy metals. This launch was used as a platform to inform stakeholders on the strategy and seek their input. Once all comments are received, they will be incorporated into the strategy, and the beneficiation strategy task team formed within the department will reconvene to prepare for a cabinet memorandum seeking final cabinet approval for the strategy to be adopted as a policy position of the country. In the area of small-scale mining, small-scale mining is one of our contributions to broad-based black economic empowerment as a department. It provides the department with an ideal platform to intervene positively in the second economy and redress past imbalances as one of our strategic objectives. The role of the small-scale mining in communities is critical as it entails community upliftment, job creation, and poverty alleviation. To date, varying levels of success have been attained by the department in this area. We are currently developing a new approach to maximize the impact of small-scale mining with particular focus on community development. Honorable members, the past year has marked a shift in how health and safety is dealt with at the mines. The industry has recorded a welcome 24% improvement in fatality levels and a reduction in injuries at work. In October 2007, the then president of the country requested a safety audit after a series of major accidents in the mining industry. The presidential audits, as it's referred to, were conducted during the year under review. In total, we had 335 high-risk mines across the country audited. Focusing on health and safety at mines, the audit has highlighted the need for mine operators to improve compliance with legal requirements, develop enabling frameworks for prosecution of negligent operators, and the building of enforcement capacity. The Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate within the department, the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate will work hard to realize implementation of the outcome of the Tripartite Leadership Summit on health and safety at mines and the recommendations from the presidential audit report. All stakeholders in the sector will be encouraged to continue to work together to improve health and safety performance of mines. Unfortunately, honorable members, the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate in the department has continued to experience capacity challenges and constraints. Among the initiatives that we have adopted by the department to address these capacity challenges was the service level agreement signed between ourselves and West University to develop a customized training package for inspectors and other units. The team from the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate that is here with us today will give more details on that area. Coming to the financial performance of the department, I'm happy to report that the department's financial performance for the year under review was very good. The figures presented here are inclusive of all programs that belong to the Department of Minerals and Energy, as we have it on the screen. The department has maintained the prescribed underspending level of below 4% in the past 4 years. Of the $3.7 billion allocated to the DME for the 2008-09 financial year, the underspending at year-end was only 0.98%. This underspending is mainly attributed to the delays in finalizing projects at year-end, leading to us having to request Treasury for rollovers. Secondly, the vacancies within certain branches. The Department of Mines and Energy, honest members, has been one of those that's been hard hit by a very high level of mobility in terms of our employees, mainly in the inspectorate and as well as in the management or corporate services. The other cause was the delays in transfers due to the contractual issues that is in the Integrated National Electrification Program, that is the program that is now run by the Department of Energy, and also the Energy Efficiency Demand Side Management Program. because those two programs, much as the budget vote includes the money that has been transferred to the municipalities, we cannot transfer the money to the municipalities until we are happy with the progress. So we did have some delays where municipalities and other parties involved in the electrification program have delays in the implementation. So those were just the main causes of our not being able to spend 100% of our budget. In the area of governance and audit report, in line with the PFMA, the international standards for professional practice of internal auditing issued by the Institute of Internal Auditors and the King II report on corporate governance requirements, internal audit has provided the audit committee and management with assurance that the internal controls are appropriate and effective. This was achieved by means of the risk management process review, governance review, as well as the identification of corrective actions and suggested enhancements to the controls and processes. From the various reports of the internal auditors, the audit report in the annual financial statements, and the management report of the Auditor General, no matters were reported that indicated any material deficiencies and deviations in the systems of internal control within the Department of Minerals and Energy. The audit committee also reviewed the activities of the risk management in the department and was satisfied with the content and quality of monthly and quarterly reports prepared and issued by the accounting officer during the year under review. Accordingly, we can report that the system of internal controls for the period under review was adequate, effective, and efficient. The audit committee reviewed the quarterly reports of internal auditors to ensure the internal audit activities and effectiveness. And the committee was satisfied that the internal audit function is operating effectively and that it has addressed the risks pertinent to the department in its audit. The Auditor General has also indicated that the financial statements present fairly and in all material respects the financial positions of the department for the year under review. Honourable members, I am also pleased to report that the Department of Mineral and Energy received yet another unqualified report for the year under review, that is for 2008-09, that is the fourth year in a row. Before I conclude, just briefly on the state-owned entities reporting to the Minister of Minerals and Energy at that particular time. There were in total 10 state-owned entities reporting to the Minister of Minerals and Energy, 5 of which now fall under the Minister of Mineral Resources. All the state-owned entities reporting to the Minister of Mineral Resources obtained clean audit reports for the year under review. While the achievements are commendable, there were some instances of non-compliance noted by the Auditor General, and the compliance function within the department itself will be making quarterly follow-ups to ensure that action plans are put in place to ensure that these instances are addressed and do not reoccur in the future. It is our plan and our commitment, honourable members, to maintain the unqualified audit report for another 4 years. Honourable members, included in the presentation of corporate services, which I'll be taking you through just now, we will be talking about the progress to date that the department has made with regard to the split of the Department of Minerals and Energy. Our plan, briefly, is to say come 1st of April next year, we have 2 independent departments, the Department of Mineral Resources and the Department of Energy, each with its own corporate services, each with its own CFO's office, each with its own audit services, and each with its own regional offices. So we're hoping to get a highly independent relationship between the departments come 1st of April next year. That, Chairperson, is the DG's overview. If I may continue with your permission, I just want to take you through now the corporate services branch presentation. Just to give a brief indication of what corporate services branch is all about. The purpose of the corporate services branch in terms of the current year is to enable the department to deliver in its mandate by providing strategic management and administrative support to the ministry and the department. The branch composition of our corporate services is, we've got four chief directorates and includes the ministry also as a chief directorate. The first chief directorate within corporate services is the chief directorate responsible for strategy, which is responsible for making sure that we have our strategic planning, we have all the activities allocated to the strategic planning process. Risk management process is also responsible for the monitoring and evaluation within the department itself. That also includes the strategic planning as well as monitoring and evaluation of the performance of the state-owned entities that report to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. Secondly is the Management Services Chief Directorate, which includes the human resources. Human resources addresses your human resource management, your human resource development, and also it also includes your employee relations and employee wellness programs. Also within Management Services is your legal services and security risk management. Communication within corporate services is internal and external communication together with international coordination. I normally refer to international coordination as our mini Department of Foreign Affairs. We are dealing with all our foreign international relations, logistics, and all those issues. And the next chief directorate is a special project, special programs. That is the directorate that's dealing with now what we call the vulnerable groups, the women, the youth, the children, and the disabled, both internally in the department, externally, in terms of the community projects that we undertake.
Thank you, ma'am. Sorry to interrupt you. But let me take the opportunity. Advocate, we believe that you were busy with very high, powerful negotiations with Russia to see whether we can also get to the level of building nuclear ships and all that, but we are very pleased that you could grace us with your presence. Welcome, DG, and the other two that have joined the DG. That advocate, I've got a problem of pronouncing your surname, and I don't want to make mistakes. But DG and the other two, if you can just introduce yourself.
Sandile Nogqina.
Sorry? And your role at the DMR? As the officer of the DG.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Ruboni Kambole, Acting Chief Director in Mineral Regulation Branch in the department.
DG and the other two colleagues, welcome. And as I said previously, relax. You know, we take everything in a relaxed, tribe manner in this committee, but we are also very serious. And we know you are also a very serious man and a disciplined man. I also want to congratulate the department and you for the clean audit that you have received for the past 4 years. And as the DGG was saying, she was hoping for the next 4 years, but I would say for the term of this committee, our term is 5 years, so let's keep it for 5 years, then we can also rejoice with you in that. But welcome, DG, and the other two, and feel free to engage and liaise. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Welcome, DG, thank you for joining us. We're talking about the special projects and special programs that we have as a chief directorate in the department. That's the chief directorate that deals mainly with, like I said, the vulnerable groups, the women, the youth, the children, as well as the disabled. And of lastly, of course, for the ministry, which are responsible for administration of the minister's office. In 2007-08, the department was requested to utilize the balance scorecard approach in our strategic planning process. And we experienced a very difficult situation where, because in the past we used to base our strategic planning process on outcome-based results instead of outcome-based main plans. So what we did for the 2008-09 is the first year that the department effectively introduced the balance scorecard within the department. As some of the members will be aware, it's only been a year. So the result or the outcome of the effect of that change will only become significant when you start operating it on an annual basis. So we're trying during the year of 2008-09, which is the year under review and discussion this morning, to implement as much as we can the balanced scorecard in our planning and as well as in the output out of the reporting of our results. Within the balanced scorecard approach, just briefly, the balanced scorecard approach addresses four things. It firstly addresses how do you understand who and what your customers are, what are the expectations from you, and then in return, what do you do to actually satisfy those expectations? What are your plans? So our business plan is based on how to address the expectations of our customers. That is the first perspective of the balanced scorecard. The second one looks at internal processes. And the internal processes perspective addresses then the issue of what systems or what internal procedures and processes are needed within the organization to address those. In other words, what you need to expect in as an organization to make sure that you are able to deliver what is your customer expectation. And then the fourth one would be the learning and growth perspective. In other words, within the learning and growth of the organization itself, what you need to excel in. What makes the organization an organization of choice? What makes your employees the best employees who can operate and deliver on what your expectations are? And the last one is the financial perspective, which also addresses, of course, how best you utilize the limited resources and get the best out of those resources. So we've implemented that, and I'll just briefly take you to you through what Corporate Services has done for the 2007-08, focusing on those four perspectives, what in each perspective we've identified and how we've addressed some of them. I think if you've gone through your annual report, you'll realize that a lot has been explained in detail of what we've done in each of those areas. Within the customer and stakeholder perspective, what are the external and external customers' expectations? We have identified our internal customers being, of course, the department itself, the DG's office, and the minister's office, and then externally would be the community. Expectations from them, from us, is to communicate what the department is all about, to find the department and provide for the information on opportunities, skills development, and training opportunities, provide oversight on the activities of the state-owned entities on behalf of the minister, as well as other interested parties. Internally, our customers that have been identified, they expect us to provide for them or create an enabling environment for the effective and efficient delivery of the services. Those are the expectations that have been identified for the Department of Minerals and Energy customers for the 2008-09 financial year. What we have done for the external customers, this is all in summary, honorable members, was basically the provision of ministerial spokesperson services, provision of a communication link between the minister's office and the department to ensure that whatever the minister is doing in terms of a political responsibility gets effected out of the department administratively. We have looked at development and implementation of annual communication strategy, which comprehensively talks to the government communication strategy and other affected parties. It addresses media liaison. It also addresses the issue of creating and maintaining stakeholder relations, community events management, our media campaigns, information dissemination, and in collaboration with other functions within the department and the stakeholders. It is in the area of communication within the department. And lastly, we've also looked at providing oversight on the activities of the SOEs. As the Minister of Minerals and Energy, now in this case the Minister of Mineral Resources, is the sole shareholder of the state-owned entities, she has, at the moment, the responsibility for ensuring the performance of the board, which in most cases they are appointed by the minister herself, in consultation, of course, with the relevant stakeholders. And those boards are for the responsibility of appointment of the management of the entities. So the minister's responsibility, on behalf of the minister, is what we do as a department, to ensure that we get the necessary information, we understand all the information needs to be understood out of the operations of the SOEs on behalf of the minister. So these activities of oversight include the monitoring of administrative, finance, and legal compliance by our SOEs, ensuring that those are aligned to the department, make sure that we don't have SOEs that forget that they are actually an arm of the of government. Because some of them are profit-making, and obviously their focus being profit-making organizations, their focus will be on profit-making. So one of the responsibilities of government is to make sure that those guys always remember that they are part of a government and they are an extension of government resources for service delivery. We also get involved as a department on SOE's budget proposals to align those to the strategic plans which they have produced and say this is what we're going to be doing in terms of our business plan and this is the budget that you are requiring. So before the minister is able to approve those, we as a department to go in there and actually analyze and make sure that what is sitting in those budget proposals will be service delivery in line with what government expects. And of course, there are quarterly annual reports which those guys have to present. Internally, we have a responsibility to ensure a safe and secure environment for all DME officials. The provision of safe working conditions, security services in all our DME buildings, and overall security of information within the department itself. We are also responsible for the monitoring strategic planning, like I've already mentioned, alignment of branch strategies to work plans, provide risk management and performance reporting by the department as required by the PFMA and good corporate governance. Strategic plans are done and tabled on time, which we have managed to do. Quarterly monitoring of the implementation of the work plans, which is another requirement of the PFMA, and also the accuracy of the performance information. Performance information, before it gets consolidated, ladies and gentlemen, to the audit, to the annual report, that has to go through the process of being evaluated in terms of the internal processes, and that work is done within the corporate services branch. One of our responsibilities also was the capacitating the department in service delivery, providing the department with appropriate skills, skills retention, training, and development. We also make sure that ensure that streamlining of gender and youth in our plans, as well as internal communication within the department itself. As I said, it is our main objective to make the Department of Energy an employer of choice. So we have a lot of responsibility to make sure that employees are happy within the Department of Mineral and Energy. The next perspective is perspective of internal processes and internal processes perspective. What internal procedures and processes we need to implement and excel within with regards to the department. Firstly, we've looked at how we improve our planning cycles. As I've already indicated, we have adopted the balanced scorecard approach. We have also managed to align the government objectives with SOE objectives and plans, and also to look at appropriately how we allocate the resources in terms of the budget requirements of the department as well as those of the SOEs. Implement best practice management strategies in support and development of our management team. Implement policies to protect the vulnerable groups internally, that is within the department, as well as externally with our community projects that we undertake. That is aligning government approach to vulnerable group policies and structures and work with the vulnerable group formations. One of them, just an example that we've been given, is the learner focus week, where we talk to high school standard 9s and 10s, as grade 10 and grade 11 and 12. I always confuse the grades. I'm sorry, that actually indicates how old I am. I'm used to standard 9 and standard 10. That's grade 11 and grade 12. We take grade 11 and 12 all over the country. Twice a year, we go around the country, bring them together for 3-4 days. We bring interested parties like our SOEs, state-owned entities. We bring industry some of the time if they're interested to come in and say to the youth, there is more to being a math and science matriculant to just being a doctor or just being a science teacher. There is more to that. We introduce them to some of the research and development, what the department does, what the department needs in terms of technically qualified people. So that's one of the things that we do to ensure that matriculants have some other direction to follow other than thinking that if you're doing math and science and don't want to be a doctor, then it means you have to go and be nothing or whatever. So that's one of the things that we get involved in. Of course, the monitoring evaluation of the performance of the department, that one is very important for us to be able to. Are we still talking to the strategic plan that we had agreed to? Are we implementing in terms of what we had said, in terms of our targets? Are we meeting our targets? Are we able to measure the targets that we have set for ourselves? I've already mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, about the introduction of the balanced scorecard, the best practice management strategies that we have done. For instance, during 2008-09, we introduced a program to develop our management internally, paid for by the department. A VET program, which is a customized program for all our directors. We started with the directors for 1 year because we cannot have all the senior managers go and attend one course, where then there's nobody to run the department. So for the first year of 2008-09, we introduced the directors. They attended a course which was specifically designed for DME managers by VET. And I'm happy to announce that we had a 98% pass out of the program. The 2% were those who could not finish because of other commitments from the department. Find that sometimes they're overseas or they're out of town during the time of the classes. But those will be finalized as well to make sure that everyone goes through the program within the department. We do have bursary and scholarship programs that are operated by the department. I talked to them just now. And also we do have management forums within the department to make sure that as managers we stick together and we provide the necessary service as a management team. Chairperson, just briefly on the gender statistics for the department. For 2008-09, we had 620 females and 574 males. And that was the total complement of the ME for 2008-09. Within that complement, we have SMS members. Within the SMS senior management level, we had 34 females and 64 males. So we just made the 50-50. Within the vulnerable groups development initiatives that we operate within the department, we have, for the youth initiative, we do have a number of other initiatives. Just the one that we've mentioned here is the issue of the youth in energy and mining, where the department supports. All we do is to provide support for these formations who come knocking at the DG's door or the minister's door to say, we are a group of youth who have come forward and we are interested in mining opportunities. So we assist them with showing them the other doors, knock on the doors with them, talk to the industry, discuss opportunities, support anyone who wants to support in terms of any skills development that we can, show them the direction. That is our involvement as a department. Unfortunately, we cannot provide them any financial assistance because we don't have money in the department, and that, of course, is not our mandate either. We've got the South African Women in Mining, which is the what is well known as SAWIMA. WUSA would be the Women in Energy. WINSA would be the Women in Nuclear. And then we've got the Young Nuclear Professionals, the South African Young Nuclear Professionals, which is also another formation, and the Learner Focus, which I've just mentioned about. This, honored members, just a few of the initiatives that we have at the department to support our skills development in vulnerable groups. The learning and growth perspective, honored members, speaks to the capacity needed by the department employees now to deliver. In other words, we want to make DME, and which of course we'll be caring for to the DMR, an employer of choice. And for us to be able to do that, we need to provide for the employees that we have. We recruit them, we have to go out of our way to keep them in the department. As I've already mentioned earlier in the introduction, it's been one of the challenges that we have. Because of the technical elements of our employees, as well as the demand that is out there, we are competing with industry that pays much better salaries than we do. But the other competition, of course, that we have is that within corporate services, because it's a support function within government itself, if you're a deputy director responsible for processing of applications, you do the same in any other government department. So the mobility of our staff members is very high in that area because once you get proper training, then you can work in any government department. So you find that people will move from one department to the other, from one level to the other. So it's very, very, very mobile at the moment. So what we've done to try and support the initiative of making DME an employer of choice is to look at HRC budget, provide a human resource development within the department, provide bursaries for the advancement of the internal employees, intensive programs that we run within the department. Those are the programs where we take in students who just completed at university and give them a one-year internship program within the department in the areas that they've chosen. And within that, some of them are lucky enough to say by the time they finish, some of them before they finish, they get employed in the department. But it's usually a one-year program, which of course is supported by a stipend, which the students would receive from the department. We're working closely with the University of Pretoria, which is our closest university, when they've got a lot of students who need to go and have an internship program for them to finalize their degrees or qualifications for the university. Other initiatives that we have is employment relations that's run within the department. We do, of course, get the union representatives in the government department, and also the implementation of change management. We've already spoken about the bursaries and scholarships and partnerships that we have with our stakeholders, that is our state-owned entities. I just, on this slide, honored members, just briefly on the statistics, summary of statistics for 2008-09. We've had overall 666 internal employees that were promoted during the financial year. That is 55% of the employees in this department have moved within the department itself, not those who have moved out of the department. In that 55%, we had 337 males, 329 females, and 45 at management level. The turnover rate for the DME for the year under review was 17.5%, which was slightly better than the year before. SMS level at 2.1%, and at junior level, we had about 15.4%. Internal training initiatives, just briefly on the budget, the total budget it allocated for the year for bursaries was 1.2 million, and of that, we used 1.05 million for the year. Training and development budget for the department was at 3.5 million, and we used 2.5 million. And in total, we had about 613 officials who attended different courses in terms of the programs that are offered by the department. That is more than 50% of the department. The next piece of statistics is the scholarships and bursaries that are being offered by the department. Internationally, we've got the Malaysian scholarship, which is an arrangement between ourselves, representing the South African government and the government of Malaysia, through one of the universities there for us to take 10 students on an annual basis from across the country, focusing on rural areas and also focusing on females, to go and spend 4 years and come up with a degree from the Malaysian university. We have been doing this program since 1999. The results have been varying depending on the individuals within the program itself. And at the moment, we, for instance, in a month's time, we're having a graduation here in South Africa, which we have agreed with the Malaysian universities to say most of our students, because they come from rural areas, from parents who cannot afford, in fact, all of them, they cannot afford to go to Malaysia for a graduation. So it means they have sacrificed 4 years for their children to go there, but they can't see them to graduate. So what we have done as a department was to agree with them that we get the rector and one or two of their university professors to come to South Africa and come and have another graduation for South African students, which we'll be having very soon. I think it's beginning of December, end of November, somewhere there. That's just, ladies and gentlemen, I won't go through the rest. Those are just the statistics that we have in terms of the internships that we have in the department and any other programs that we have for development in the department. And, of course, the financial perspective is for us to always get value for money, the budget that we have, proper utilization, proper appropriation, as well as prioritization. Chairperson, before I conclude, I just want to take you through the last slide very quickly on the progress of the DME on the split. What we've done to date, first of all, we started with the process of what we call scoping. That process talks to the analysis of functions to be split. We go through the whole department and look at each of the functions within the Department of Minerals and Energy, which functions need to be split. And in this particular case, it was mostly on the support services, which should be the corporate services, the CFO's office, and the audit services. We look at the capacity that is required, the capacity that we have, and then we develop the business case on the split option. The result of the business case, which was presented to the DG and the two new ministers, was that between now, which was then was beginning of August, and the end of March 2010, we will have what we call an interim phase, where the support services, because we cannot split them immediately, the support services will be housed under the current DG of Minerals and Energy, which was Advocate Nonkrina, as the hosting DG, because he is the hosting budget responsible person. So we took all that function under the current DG, and that has been placed under the Department of Mineral Resources. Because within line function, it's easier for us to split line functions, as I indicated earlier when I introduced this, that within line function, we already have branches that provide mining and branches to energy. So that group is easy to just put them into a new department with a new minister. But for support services and the budget, because the budget still belongs to one accounting officer, who was the accounting officer of DMD, and support services. So that was taken in-house under the Department of Mineral Resources as a hosting department. And during which time, then we'll be looking at the split and the issue of what budget do we get from Treasury at the end of this all. The end stage would be at the end, as from the 1st of April, where we have now the two separate departments with their own budget, with their own accounting officer, with their own almost everything. So that one is adopted by the two ministers. We have done that. And the relationship between the two ministers now in terms of the provision of support services is done through what we have is a service level agreement that has been signed by the two ministers and the hosting DG, which is the DG of Minerals and Energy in terms of the previous structure. We are part of, as a department, we are part of a government-wide restructuring team, which is called the NMOS, which is the national macro organization of the state. It's a team of that's comprising of departments that are affected by the split in terms of the new cabinet that was announced by our president, chaired by DPSA, Treasury, and the presidency. As a DME, we are part of that. That team has set up its own structure, timeframes, and everything on how to effect the government-wide split of all these departments affected, the total of the big six departments. We are part of that. We have formed those teams within the department itself to address a number of issues within the split. And I must say that, honestly, it has been a serious challenge for us because we are using the same people who have their daily work. Who have their daily work to do to provide that service. So over and above what they've been working on now, they also have to provide the service of making sure that we go through the split. Because there are a number of things that need to be taken care of when you split. We have held the DOE We have had the DOE and the DMR strategic planning sessions, where we have the two new ministers now giving us a direction of where they want their organization to go. Because for us to be able to provide a structure, we need to provide a structure that talks to the focus, that talks to the vision and the mission of the new department. So we've gone through the process of identifying the mission and the visions of the two separate departments with our new ministers, and then we've been able then to provide a structure that talks to those, the strategic direction of the two entities. To date, we've finalized the structure for the Department of Energy, discussed it with the acting DG of Minerals and Energy. We've discussed it with the DG, acting DG, the minister, and it's been presented last week. It was presented to DPSA for the DPSA minister's determination. By Friday, we should have finished the structure for the Department of Mineral Resources, and then hopefully within 2-3 days after that, we'll be able to present that also to DPSA. So most of the work has been done for the department, and I must say I am proud of my team because they have been able to do that. We are the first government department to be able to produce that within the time frame, even before the time frame is up anyway. Then the next process will be looking at the finances in terms of what do we get and when. Then we are able to complete the job profiling and job evaluation process, where we are hoping to get to get, once you've identified the structure and it's been approved, then you should be able to talk about what jobs do we need to address all those structures or the functions that have been identified already. Once you finish that process, it should take us a couple of weeks because we've already started. We start looking at the matching and placing process. As the President indicated in his speech when he announced his new cabinet, no one is expected to lose their job because of restructuring. And that's where the department is all about. No one is going to be losing their job within DME. What we'll do is take the current staff as they are and start matching them to the requirements of the new position in terms of their skills, in terms of their experience, in terms of their personal interests. Where they want to go, they want to go to energy, they want to go to mining, and then within that area, which area they're interested in. So we place the existing staff, and once we've done that, then we identify the outstanding or the vacancies within the two organizations. Then we go through the advertising process, during which process the individuals within the department, the old DME staff like myself, if there's a position that I'm interested in, then I can apply for that position. So people are going to be moving around a lot. So it's going to be a lot of moving around because once you've placed them, you have to take them. You can still move if you want to, in terms of the application, applying for another job and going through the interviews and all of that. So that is basically what we will be looking at. The challenges, that's mainly at the moment, our main challenge, other than the funds, of course, that everyone is going through, are the challenges of the mobility within the corporate services. People are uncertain of what's going to happen in the future, which is normal for change. And then when they get better offers outside, they go. So we've had a fair amount of turnover over the past couple of months within corporate services in the DME. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, I think that we'll take all the presentations and then get some questions. If you think we should take one and Q&A, and or should we take all everything and then Q&A?
Everything.
Good.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Then I'll allow my colleagues, the CFO will start, and then we'll have the next in terms of the sequence of the rest of the presentation.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you for this opportunity to present our annual report. The presentation from the CFO's branch would mainly cover the following areas. So I'll talk about the composition of the branch, explaining exactly what the functions are, just to give a bit of perspective in terms of explaining some of the key achievements going forward. I'll then cover some of the key achievements at a strategic level. In other words, those that are sitting at DG level, those that are in DG's performance agreement, because a lot of what we do is more day-to-day operational work, which I'm sure that if we were to go into that detail, half the committee would probably be falling asleep by the time we finish, because it's too operational. Then I will go into some of the key challenges that we face in terms of achieving some of our strategic objectives. And then I'll touch a little bit in more detail around the issue of budget performance. The introduction from the DG has sort of highlighted some of the key achievements that are there. I'll share with the committee some of the numbers involved in there, and then some of the key observations that are coming out of the budget or financial performance. So it's quite a short presentation, Honorable Chair. This branch mainly focuses on providing support in relation to financial, supply chain, facilities, as well as information management services to the overall department and the ministry. To break it down slightly further, the components within this branch are about six. We've got a supply chain management function, which deals with issues of procurement, issues of logistics management, where we also cover the issue of payments to service providers or suppliers, which has been quite a topical issue of late in terms of the whole day-to-day turnaround time. Information technology self-explanatory. We also do systems development and maintenance. This is where now we look at what are the needs of the business in terms of, for example, the function of processing license application. What sort of ICT tools do we need to support that particular function within the department? We also have a component that looks at financial planning and management accounting, which is primarily doing budgeting, annual reporting, annual financial statements, and monthly reporting to Treasury and other stakeholders. Expenditure management deals mainly with processing of invoices, dealing with issues of payroll management. And the last one there is the transport facilities and records management, where we deal with issues around government-owned vehicles, subsidized schemes, as well as registry functions. Moving on to the next slide on the key achievements. As I indicated, these are pitched at a high level. These are strategic projects that we had identified at the beginning of the financial year. There are, of course, other operational issues that are explained in detail in the annual report as part of the Service Delivery Improvement Plan, where we've gone into the details of exactly what was happening for each directorate. On the budget performance, I will cover this in detail at a later stage on the more detailed slide, but as the DDG here mentioned, we have been consistently performing quite well as far as our budget is concerned, and those numbers are going to come out clearly as we go. The issue of the clean audit report, with the leadership from our DG, we've been able to work very well as a department in terms of really taking this process very seriously. In every manager's performance agreement, there is an issue around their contribution to the audit report. So if there are particular findings from the Auditor General in a particular area, then that manager has to move and make sure that those things are sorted out. And we have seen that has contributed to this performance where we are getting clean reports year in, year out. In terms of financial reporting, we are quite happy to report that we've maintained timely and accurate financial reporting, both in terms of the monthly in-year reporting, where we are expected to report on our expenditure against budget on a monthly basis to National Treasury, to our minister, and all other interested stakeholders. That has been done very well. On the ICT part, there has been a huge backlog in terms of upgrading our ICT infrastructure. So we've had to then come up with an infrastructure upgrade plan, which we started implementing in the previous financial year, and we're still continuing to finalize that because, unfortunately, it's quite a costly exercise. So we are taking it in smaller bits and pieces. Linked to that is the master systems plan, which, as I explained earlier on, is around saying, how do we align the needs of the business how do we align our systems to the needs of the business to be able to effectively render a service to the Republic? And then we've also looked at the implementation, or rather the finalization of the implementation of the supply chain management framework, where we're beginning to see some significant improvements in terms of our turnaround times on procurement, on processing of invoices to suppliers, and also the issue of accountability, which really links to the earlier achievement that we talked about around the audit report. Linked to that is the issue of asset management, which is a headache for most departments in the public sector, but we have been able to manage this very effectively. And finally, the implementation of policies within finance and supply chain management, we recognized that for us to be able to operate in a consistent manner, we need to ensure that all the administrative policies and procedures are in place. So we embarked on a specific project, specific drive to say, which type of policies do we need in finance to ensure that there is compliance with PFMA, but at the same time ensuring that there is prescribed turnaround time so that things don't just get, you know, done in at leisure. We are able to have accountability in terms of the service that we rent. And those policies have been finalized and approved and have been implemented already. Moving on to the next slide, where we're just highlighting some of the key challenges in response to what we had identified as being strategic projects. On the ICT particularly, we're finding that the whole issue of skills attraction and retention is quite a big challenge, particularly when you look at the kind of money that people are able to earn outside, for example, in the private sector, as compared to what they would get if they were to sit in the public sector. So we are having to come up with new initiatives to say, how can we find a model that would work for us where we don't entirely outsource our IT department. We still develop our own internal capacity, but with some help from outside. So we have looked at the model, and we are busy finalizing that. The other issue is around the aging ICT infrastructure. Here we're talking around issues, things like your servers, the network infrastructure, that is unable to cope with the growing business demand, and we are having to spend a lot of money upgrading that. We have started the upgrade, but it, as I indicated earlier on, it's going to be a long-term project, which we are hoping to finalize within the next 2 or 3 years. Office accommodation has been a challenge. About a year or so ago, we found ourselves in a situation where we were even unable to fill some of the vacancies that existed within the department because we just outgrew the size of the offices, and also the contributing factor was around the design of the buildings that we are sitting in, because members would appreciate that lately most organizations are moving into the open plan type of setup, but some of the buildings that we occupy are not designed to be open plan type of building. They would require huge investments to do that. So we identified that as a major challenge, and we've engaged in a project to make sure that we move towards a situation where we have adequate and suitable office accommodation for the department. The last challenge is financial resources. When you look at all those issues that we've listed up there, each and every one of them costs money. And unfortunately, as you would know, we've had a recession, we've had a couple of budget reductions, and we are now looking at probably a zero growth in our baseline allocation. So we are having to do a lot more with the financial resources that we have. And those demands are not stopping. There is a need to invest in all of those things with the limited resources that we have. So there's a lot of reprioritization that we have to make in this whole process. So that is one of the challenges that we have. And having said that, I know the numbers look relatively small, but just to try and unpack this table here, on the left-hand side, these are the main programs that sit within the Department of Minerals and Energy. With the first four, with the exception of Program 1, which is administration, where currently it's a joint responsibility or shared between the two departments. Program 2, 3, and 4 fall squarely within the Department of Mineral Resources, with 5 and 6 falling under the Department of Energy. And then Program 7 is a combination of those that are within mineral resources and others within energy. 7 is mainly where we're doing transfers to external organizations, including our own state-owned entities. So the first column there, after the summary of program, is the budget allocation per program, how much we were allocated for the financial year. With the next column looks at how much did we manage to spend against what was originally allocated. And then we show you what the variance was and a comparison to the previous financial year spending. As you can see, the underspending is sitting somewhere around 50 million. And the DDG covered the percentages involved around that. If we can just move to the next slide. This slide is meant to just give a history. Earlier on, we indicated that for the last 4 years, our budget performance, our level of underspending has been sitting at below 4%, which is an acceptable norm. And we are happy to see that there has been significant improvement. If you look at the 2004 and 5 financial year, where we were sitting at 3.5, whilst at the year under review, our variance was sitting at somewhere around 1%. So there has been a significant improvement in terms of that. And this is owing to the number of initiatives that we've implemented, including having a departmental budget committee that sits on a regular basis and looks at performance on the budget for each branch and recommends corrective action where there is a misallocation of budget or underperformance, and also monthly reporting to the Director General and the Minister where we indicate the performance around the budget, so we are able to respond on time in terms of issues relating to the budget. So in short, Honorable Chairperson, this is the presentation from the Office of the CFO. The last slide, all the key observations have been covered in the introductory presentation. It's just summarizing the budget performance and the reasons for the underspending. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
I was just checking the presentations that are still to come. Just to be precise, to say how many, so that maybe we could split them. And then we have a break.
So after mine, I also said there's 3 more.
There's 2 more.
2 more.
3 in total.
Okay, so that the members want to, let's do the mine health and safety and then take questions or carry on with all the presentations. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, I don't know whether maybe or not, but if maybe we can get an indication in terms of time each presentation is going to take, because on that basis we can be able to make an informed proposal.
Okay.
Like, for example, if one is going to take 10, then taking the time we can be able to make a concrete proposal.
Okay, GDG?
They're 30 shorter than mine, because mine included the DG and everything, so we are looking at 10-15 minutes more each one of them, so I don't think that'll be that long.
I propose I just take all of them, just finish them, then we can engage at the end. Honorable Gamera?
Okay.
Is that fine, members? Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, members of the press, DG, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'll be presenting all the performance of the Management Safety Inspectorate. And the section in the annual report starts on page 63 that I'll be presenting on. Okay. The main purpose of the Management Safety Inspectorate is to safeguard health and safety of mine employees and those people that are affected by mining activities. And the measurable objective of the inspectorate is to reduce mining-related deaths, injuries, and ill health through formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, and application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance in the mining sector. And the next few slides will be focusing on the different strategic objectives of the department and highlighting what were the achievements of the branch. And I'll be mainly focusing on the branch initiatives as well as what has been achieved. As you can see on this first slide is that what the branch needs to do is make sure that we comply with the PFMA and the guidelines. And at the end of the financial year, we noticed that there were some challenges which have been discussed with the office of the CFO with regard to cash flow management. And then on the next item under the branch initiatives, which is a proper budgeting for program initiative, that was achieved. And then at the third branch initiative, which is develop and review operational policies and procedures, is that the branch has developed a number of operational procedures. And one of them that I can highlight is the one on auditing and inspection of health and safety management systems at mines. And these procedures are to make sure that our regional offices have got a uniform approach when it comes to auditing health and safety management systems at mines. And then if we move to the next slide, is that the inspectorate has developed a national system. And the objective of the system is for the management to be able to monitor the performance of the inspectorate and the performance of the mining industry. And I'll be talking to that later on in later slides as well. Currently, we've got a SEMRA system that we use to monitor fatalities and injuries in the mining sector. And from time to time, we've experienced problems in terms of the availability of the system. And the CFO has alluded to that in his presentation. Honorable members, this was also highlighted in the DG's opening remarks that we have had some capacity constraints, and the department decided to embark on a capacity building program internally. And as you can see in this slide, that we've got 11 vessels that are at university and technicons, and we've got 23 learnerships, and those people were trained at Goldfields. And I'm glad to inform the committee that these people have finalized or they've completed that experiential training at Goldfield, and they've been allocated to the different regional offices to address our capacity constraints. And then thirdly, is that we've got 37 internships at head office and in the regional offices. And lastly, is that a number of employees attended the various courses at various levels. And again, that intervention was mainly to address our capacity constraints. On the next slide, the branch initiative was to collate and disseminate research information, technical assistance, and medical assistance. It's important for the inspectorate to learn and implement new developments through research. And most of our research is done in the Management Safety Council. And then second is that we also need to make sure that our legislation is internationally benchmarked to make sure that we provide the employees and the mining sector the best protection on health and safety. On the review of the legislation, I'm also glad to report that the Amendment Act was signed by the State President in April this year, and it became effective on the 31st of May 2009. And some of the highlights in the amendment was that we're strengthening the enforcement provisions, and the administrative fines were increased from 200,000 to 1 million. So currently the administrative fines are standing at 1 million rand. One of our main activities at the inspectorate is the auditing of health and safety management systems at mines. As you can see, that what was achieved was 146%, and that is based on the actual complement that we've got in the inspectorate. And then in this slide, we're highlighting the work that is done by our inspectors in the regional offices in the form of a follow-up inspection. That means that if there were areas that the mining companies didn't comply with, they need to make sure that they also conduct a follow-up inspection. And that needs to be done or completed within a month. After every accident or incident, our inspectors must also go out to the mining companies and also do investigations. And that must also be completed within a month. As you can see, that we've achieved 84% in terms of completing our investigations. And then lastly, when it comes to our local investigations and inquiries, we've only achieved 45%. That means that after every fatality in the mining sector, we need to conduct an inquiry. And I think the major challenge there is that the mining companies require legal representation, and many times it tends to delay the completion of those inquiries. But the situation is being closely monitored. Moving to the second strategic objective, we've got also a survey directorate that conducts survey inspections of the maps in the mining companies. And they also assist with the rehabilitation work to do measurements on how much work needs to be done in rehabilitation. And then lastly, the inspectorate also conducts investigation to complaints for members of the public. And we've set ourselves a target of 1 month in completing those investigations. This work is mainly emanated from the MPRDA. The inspectorate must also go through the mining and prospecting permits that have been submitted to the mineral regulation section. It also goes through the management safety section. And as you can see, the performance in the various areas there. And I must say that we are quite happy with the achievement of the inspectorate. And then the next few slides will sort of highlight the performance of the mining sector in terms of health and safety. In this first slide here, we've got the various diseases that have been reported to the department. As you can see, that currently the highest incidence of diseases is mainly due to pulmonary tuberculosis, followed by noise due to hearing loss, because most of the or many mining companies are using equipment which emits a lot of noise, and that causes deafness to the employees. The other one is silicosis, and that one mainly comes from the coal mines, because the hard rock that is mined in the coal mines contains what we call the silica dust, and that causes silicosis. This is the same information, just broken down to the different commodities. And this is for the gold mines. Again, I mean, you can see the same thing sort of emanating from the previous one. Again, the highest incidence is
pulmonary tuberculosis, followed by cirrhosis, and then lastly, benign induced hearing loss. And then this graph here shows the performance of the platinum sector. And what I'd like to highlight is that most of the cases of silicosis that have been reported in the platinum sector don't really emanate from the platinum sector. I think they are mainly imported from the other commodities, mainly gold. That means it's due to some of the employees moving from the gold sector to the platinum sector. And then this slide compares the number of deaths due to respiratory diseases and mine accidents. And I think the conclusion can be drawn to this is that we're having currently about 3 times more fatalities due to this ill health as opposed to fatalities. Again, the challenge is that with the occupational diseases, there's sort of a long time lag between the exposure of the employees and the actual diagnosis of the different diseases. This slide sort of highlights the performance of the mining sector. And I would like also just to quote our minister. The minister has said that one death is one death too many in the mining sector. And our goal as a department is to achieve zero occupational diseases, injuries, and fatalities. I think with that backdrop is that between 2007 and 8, the fatalities decreased by 28%, and the fatality rate for 2008 was 0.5 per million hours worked, and the injury rate between 2007 and 8 decreased by 12%, and the rate for 2008 was 3.2. And this table just gives us the number of fatalities per province. As you can see, that last year we had 171 fatalities as compared to 220 the previous year. And the corresponding reduction in terms of the fatality rate was about 28%. And this graph just shows the same information. In a graph form, as you can see that currently the gold sector has got the highest fatality rate per million hours worked, followed by the diamond sector and the others, which is mainly in your platinum coal and other sectors, which is exclude those that have been mentioned there. And then this table presents the number of injuries in 2007 and 8. As you can see, the total for 2007 was 3,879, and for last year it was 3,075. And the increase was about 11%. Similarly, this information is being presented in a graph form. The general accidents at the moment are sort of the highest, and those include inhalation, annihilation of toxic gases, and so on, followed by falls of ground, and then thirdly is transportation and mining. Okay, another I'd like to highlight in this table is the number of fatalities that occurred. As you can see that in terms of the classification, the highest fatalities occurred due to falls of ground, followed by transportation and mining, and then lastly, it was general. The recent performance of the mining sector is that currently we've had about 3,099 injuries compared to 2,183 injuries this year. that. And the next one looks at the fatalities. Currently this year, we've had, that was up to October the 13th, we've had 131 fatalities compared to 241 the same period last year. And as you can see, the performance of the different commodities. Again, at the moment, our gold sector has had the most fatalities. In conclusion, Honorable Chair, is that currently the platinum sector has had an improvement in terms of drug-related fatalities of 47%, and the gold sector has had a reduction of 22%. And then in terms of the transport-related fatalities, the platinum sector has had a reduction of 25%. And unfortunately, the gold sector had an increase, quite a significant increase of 42%. And they've also had the conveyance transport fatalities where 9 employees were killed. And we had also 4 employees killed due to seismic events. And then lastly, and it's been reported quite extensively in the press that criminal mining has had quite a significant impact on the safety and security of employees in our mining sector. Thank you, Chairperson.
Which one is next, did you?
Okay. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, the DG and DDGs, ladies and gentlemen, the primary objective of my presentation is to provide a synopsis of the key achievements of the Mineral Policy and Information Branch during the last financial year. The presentation provides a high-level discussion of 6 key achievements of the branch, which includes, include beneficiation, security of energy supply, mining closure strategy, mineral charter review, small-scale mining, and MIGDEF. Honorable members, a detailed presentation of the achievements of the branch is reflected from page 84 to page 99 of the annual report. Allow me to preface my presentation with a brief overview of the organizational structure of the branch. I think this is necessary to contextualize the achievements of the branch. Basically, the branch consists of two chief directorates. It's the Chief Directorate of Mineral Policy and the Chief Directorate of Mineral Promotion. Under the Chief Directorate of Mineral Policy, we have Mine Environmental Research and Development, as well as our Mineral Policy Directorate. Within the Mineral Promotion Chief Directorate, we've got the Directorate of Mineral Economics, Beneficiation Economics Directorate, as well as the Small-Scale Mining Directorate. that in a nutshell, you know, constitute the structure of the mineral policy and promotion branch. The principal purpose of the branch is to formulate mineral-related policies that are designed to promote and make the mining and minerals industry of South Africa attractive to the investors. In terms of the specific objectives of the program, the branch seeks to accomplish three distinct but interrelated outcomes. The first one is to conduct research that provides relevant information to assist in enhancing the global competitiveness of our mining and minerals industry. The second objective is to review policies and formulate legislation to facilitate a sustainable transformation and growth of the mining and minerals industry of South Africa. And lastly, to review policies and formulate legislation designed to attract new investment into South Africa's minerals and industry. That, in a nutshell, you know, provides the key strategic objectives of the branch. I now would like to speak about the first achievement of the branch. About 3 weeks ago, I presented to this esteemed committee our beneficiation strategy. Honorable members, I am not going to bore you with the details of our beneficiation strategy because it was presented here about, you know, about 3 weeks ago, and we had a thorough discussion on what the beneficiation strategy seeks to achieve. We also spoke about some of the challenges are being presented by our beneficiation initiative. What I would like to share with honorable members, you know, today is that we have, you know, developed our draft beneficiation strategy. It was, after cabinet approval, launched, you know, to the public on the 30th of March this year. We invited the public together with our stakeholders to give us their input as well as their views on beneficiation strategy. We received a lot of positive comments regarding beneficiation. A few challenges that were raised related, you know, to the practical challenges of implementing our beneficiation strategy. We have incorporated the views and comments of the public together with our stakeholders. We are currently consulting with our sister departments, namely Department of Public Enterprises, Department of Economic Development, Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Energy, as well as the National Treasury. We are quite confident that the beneficiation strategy will be finalized and adopted by Cabinet for implementation during the current financial year. May I proceed to this to the second key achievement of the brand, which relates to the security of energy generation and supply. We are all aware, honourable members, that one of the challenges that we are facing as a country is that of security of energy generation and supply. And in our efforts to contribute towards finding a sustainable solution to this challenge, the branch, you know, has provided commodity information, intelligence to the electricity, nuclear, and hydrocarbon units. And this information was primarily designed, you know, to identify different, you know, options that we have as a country in terms of addressing or coming up with a sustainable solution to the challenge of the security of energy supply. As a result of this intervention, we have produced a uranium strategy. We also have produced a coal. We have not yet, you know, finalized the coal, you know, strategy, but we are in the process of finalizing that strategy. In addition to that, we as a department have identified uranium and coal as commodities that perhaps need to be declared as strategic commodities, so that people don't do as they please, you know, with regards to mining and exporting those commodities. The third achievement that I would like to speak about concerns mine closure strategy. We are all aware of what happens or what used to happen in the past when the life of mines came to an end. The mines would be closed, but one of the challenges that we had was that we did not pay sufficient attention to the need to make sure that the environment was properly rehabilitated. So what we are doing now, we're focused on the Wet Basin and the far west rand areas, you know, the Kosh, you know, area, in terms of developing strategies that would be implemented to ensure that the closure of mines really does not result in dire, you know, consequences for the surrounding community. Honourable members, again, I was here to present before this esteemed, you know, committee about the mining charter review. We spent, you know, considerable time, you know, talking about the findings of our mining charter review, which haven't, you know, been shared with the public, because we still have to take those findings through our internal, you know, processes. But the Director General was kind enough to give us permission to come and share with you what the findings of the mining charter review tell us. We specifically spoke about, you know, what the situation is with regards to the ownership element of the mining charter. We spoke about our findings on human resources development. We spoke about our findings on employment equity and all the other elements of the scorecard. Maybe what I need to remind honorable members today is that our major finding was that the mining industry appears to have complied with only one element of the scorecard, namely the employment equity element. We are in the process of finalizing that report, and once everything has been finalized, I am certain that we will get another opportunity to come, you know, and present to the committee once we have taken our report as well as our recommendations through the internal, you know, processes. I would like to proceed, you know, to small scale mining, which is another, you know, a main achievement of the branch. We are all aware that one of the main reasons why this government has taken a decision to promote small enterprises in general is that there is no evidence, you know, to suggest that the promotion of small enterprises does assist in terms of job creation as well as poverty alleviation. As a department, we have also decided that we need, you know, to come up with a small scale mining strategy that is designed to promote sustainable small-scale mining enterprises within within our sector. In the past, our strategy was to provide financial support to small scale mining enterprises. We had a committee that was specifically dealing with that. After doing research, we have realized that that is not the sustainable way of promoting small-scale mining enterprises. Hence, we have decided to come up with a new strategy that will take us forward in terms of promoting small-scale mining enterprises. During the last financial year, we assisted about 15 new small-scale mining projects. But as I'm indicated, you know, going into the future, we are not going to be providing any financial support. And lastly, honourable members, I would like to speak briefly about MIDET. When the Deputy Director General made her opening remarks, she did speak in detail about MIDET, which is a task team, or multi-stakeholder task team, which was set up in December of last year to find creative ways and means of dealing, or rather, mitigating the adverse impact of the economic meltdown that we've been experiencing since around October of last year. The primary objective was to ensure that all options were considered before resorting to retrenchment. Those of you who were following the media, you know, reports would recall that the prophets of doom were anticipating that we would lose about 100,000 jobs as a result of the economic meltdown. But I am happy to report that as a result of this strategic intervention that we put together with our partners in the industry, we have been able to reduce the number to, in fact, it's not 37,000, it's to 25,000 which is a major achievement. And lastly, we have decided that the task team also needs to assist us in terms of finding creative ways and means of ensuring that when the next, you know, upswing, you know, comes, we as a mining industry are ready to make use of those opportunities. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Sir. Last one.
Yes, Gigi. Thank you, Gigi. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Director General, DDG, and colleagues. My presentation is going to focus around the mineral regulation branch in the Department of Mineral Resources. I'm going to be talking to the overview of our performance, covering both the achievements that we have accomplished and the challenges that we've had. The purpose of this of the mineral regulation branch is to regulate the minerals and mining sector to achieve transformation and sustainable development. Our objective is to transform the minerals and mining sector into one that that contributes to sustainable development in our country. And how do we achieve this? We do this through licensing, monitoring, and enforcing compliance and ensuring closure at the end of mine. I would briefly like to talk to the structure that is leading the mineral regulation branch, which is not covered in the presentation. The structure consists of the Deputy Director General, three chief directors, nine regional managers, so which means that our service delivery is coal-faced and based basically in the regional offices. My presentation is linked to our program, which is on page 76 to 83 of the annual report. I would also like to talk to some of the things that are in the annual report. We have reflected there that as of 30 March 2009, we have received about 20,163 applications, of which 16,190 we accepted, and out of those we rejected 3,653 and issued 5,805. I'd also like to report that we've streamlined our licensing processes in the branch under the leadership of the Director General to ensure consistency of decision-making within the whole branch in regulating the industry. Thank you. I will now talk to the branch outcomes, the results that we've achieved, and the constraints that we've had. The first branch outcome was to increase the number of HDSAs and the women participation in the mining industry. Our measure was to process applications and to grant rights to historically disadvantaged South Africans. We had a target of about 27, but we've overachieved and granted to about 152 HDSAs. Our second measure was to license women-led companies. We had a target of 18. We've exceeded our target as we've granted 34 women-led companies. Our other objective was to redress past imbalances. This, what it seeks to achieve, was to conduct the industry workshops and workshops for HDSAs and the women-led companies. The impact of the workshops generally has been an understanding of the regulatory framework within the mining industry. We have set out to have 9 workshops, and we've, at the end of the day, conducted 29 workshops. Our other initiative, which is a continuation of contributing towards sustainable development and growth, was to conduct charter compliance inspections. I must mention here that we have underachieved. We had targeted to conduct 140 inspections on licensed mining operations. We only managed to achieve 119, which is contrary to what is mentioned in the annual report. The reason, I beg your pardon, in the presentation. The reason for the underachievement was that we had to refocus our attention to finalizing the conventions which we had committed to the minister that we would try and finalize by end of March 2009. More of our other measures was to identify in enterprise development projects and to ensure that enterprise development projects are included in the social and labor plans. I can report that we have achieved that, as the results show in the progress report and my presentation there. Still on actively contributing towards sustainable development. One of our outcome testing is to reduce the level of poverty around mining and labor sending areas. I can report that we achieved that through the number of projects that we utilize mining companies to undertake, and the results are listed therein. And the projects that we have achieved, the infrastructure projects that we have achieved, for instance, are building of clinics, libraries, schools, training centers, multi-purpose centers, agricultural farming, and brick-making facilities. This, we utilize the licensing process and we utilize the social and labor plan through with mining companies. Our other outcome is found in managing the environment, and how do we do that? We do that through conducting environmental management inspections, compliance inspections. We also do that through compliance inspections on the mining work programs and the prospecting work programs. We have targeted 1,984 inspections. We have overachieved in that we conducted 2,350 inspections. And where we found in non-compliance, we would issue out notices to rectify the non-compliance. Our other branch outcome was to reduce government environmental risk and liability. We had planned to, in this financial year, rehabilitate 5 projects, and in the next financial year, we're planning to rehabilitate 8 projects, including illegal mining that we've identified and set out as a priority, which is in the KwaZulu-Natal province. Our other branch of the outcome was effective regulation of the mining industry. How did you achieve this? Was through development of internal guidelines. I can report that, contrary to what is mentioned here on this report, we have compiled guidelines in respect of mining work program, social and labor plan, and mining title. One of our other branch outcomes is to improve security of tenure. And how do we do that? It's done through after licensing and granting of rights. We have to go through a process called registration of the right to ensure security of tenure. That is done through our mining titles office. The target for registration there is 30 days, and what we can report on is that depending on the client's commitment to rectify issues of non-registrability, we are able to live up to those targets. The other last outcome that we have still on improving security of tenure is the recording of mining permits, which we have to do and which we try to do within 14 days from date that is accepted or is lodged at the mining titles office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Gigi, is there something you want to add?
No,
Chair.
I'm waiting for questions.
Okay, thank you, DJ. Honorable members, the space is yours to utilize. Honorable Cedarans, Honorable Ngambi, Kamede, Honorable Mining Bokun, Honorable Nguni, that's the first round of events, so can we do a complete round of events now?
No.
Yes. Yeah. We need to be safe. We have given the department a complete round, so let's take the first. Mm-hmm. Or you want to take how many rounds? 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. 12. Honorable Lee. Honorable Chen. Honorable
Honorable Van Dingen. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join you in appreciating and commending the amazing job that is being done by the department, and for the mere fact that for the past 4 years, they are reporting. At the same time, will come the presentation that was presented to us today. Maybe they have this thing report because they know how to even manage their presentation here. I have 70 questions, but they've decided to take us till around one, and they know that we're not going to engage that much. But it was good, DG, to send some of your team to come and make presentations, because there are presentations that are being presented here, and you might find that we might not have a lot of questions because we're able to engage. That is why, Chairperson, I want to raise it that the Mineral Regulation Branch, if they can be given opportunity in future, we engage them. Because I've noted one or two things where even the presenter was disputing some of the things that she was presenting, saying, no, it's contrary to what is happening. So it means if we can have them and have the full session, then we can learn a lot, teach each other in the process. Let me get to what I've noted. It's good to have the information, Mam Zoom, that you are assisting our people on the ground, touching even the rural areas. But as long as a National Council of Provinces, you have heard almost all of us say, somebody saying Mpumalanga, Free State, Northern Cape, it means we'll always have interest to say, where is Mpumalanga in those rural students that we are talking about? To have that information so that once we do conscience work, we can be able to even motivate other people on the ground to say, this department can assist you. You have this one coming from Buzini, right from a rural village. This one is coming from Northern Cape, deep in a rural village. So to have the breakdown in terms of provinces can assist us. The obviously, it will indicate the geographical spread of which is going to assist us. The second question is in relation to the conditional grant paid to municipalities. You have assisted more than 100 out of the 283 that we have in the country. It's exactly the same like the first question. If you can send us a detailed report making a breakdown of provinces, for us not to conclude that maybe you are focusing on this part of the province, but even if you are focusing in particular provinces, how can we make sure that we even have these other provinces that are not touched? The third one, normal procedure when dealing with donations, the normal procedure. Simplify it for us to understand it, because I've seen from the report number of schools, NGOs, we have said a lot of schools and people. So to understand the procedure that you're using when once you receive whether a request. The connection to household and schools, if we can have that in terms of the breakdown. Not the last one, but before the last one. I said I'm not going to ask all of them, Chairperson. I don't think you are doing fine in terms of dealing with the disability. We are in this institution, we know a lot of these organizations, and we are from these villages, in as much as we are from these villages and townships, but as a department, we are not doing fine in terms of disability. So let's work on that. Let's share information. If you have some posts, that is why, in some instances from the report, when you check how you dealt with the issue of disability, it leaves much to decide. It's a challenge. There's a room for improvement. So we have to work on that one. Because those are questions DG for the next 4 or 5 years that we'll be raising. We'll focus on rural areas. There's the pride of government. We'll talk about this disability. And there's no way that we can come here and say we don't get them. There's no way. I mean, we have them in South Africa. And if you have got a challenge, once we have the post,
you can even try to communicate with her so that we can provide you with people that can assist when you. Then the last one, Chairperson, it's in from the report 269. The department has not yet been able to get a member of the SMS to implement the provision contained in part 6 of Chapter 9 of the Public Service Regulation Act in 2001. It hasn't yet been. You don't have that passage up to now. Maybe if you can share with us the reasons or the challenges. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Camara.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, to add my voice on congratulating the department on unqualified audit. And secondly, to say to the DG, all of course, with Kwabini Nyamalaish, Shango Pepeza, thanks for the respect that you really give to the committee. You know, you really go all out of the way. Whether the whole team is here and whether you send Kwabini or you send a visitor, but the respect you do show. Thanks very much. And to Kwabini Nyamalaishi, she was just in my constituency in the beginning of the year bringing electricity. Thanks for that. I'll leave some of the questions because Honorable Jomo has asked them, but I'll be doing some injustice if I don't add my voice on the disability issue. It will suffice just to say that. And also, maybe you might think of getting a workshop from the Disability Forum, even on terminology that is used, and in understanding some of the things. That will be one of the suggestions. Because in the disability sector, we don't believe we are disabled. It is an environment that we live in, that actually makes us not to function properly. I want to skip. I'll start with the mineral regulation from the bottom and add to what Honorable Nyambi was saying. You know, if you plan to have 9 workshops and you end up with 29, to me it means something is wrong. Because if you plan, you budget. And then how do you account then for the other 20 extra? You know, that's planning. If you plan, your cost is in your plan. So it will add to what Honorable Nyambi was saying, that later on you might get a presentation. And also just to say where the projects are that attend to the redress of the past imbalances. In the next presentation, when we have mineral regulation, we'd like to see where these projects are in KwaZulu-Natal. The other issue, which I've always had a challenge in admitting, is the issue of self-investigation by the mine should an accident happen. I know it is procedural. One would ask, do you want to just make it a process? Because if I make a mistake, if there's a problem, I wouldn't like to punish myself. But I do understand that you want the mind to investigate first before you come in. Can't we do that a little bit better? On the annual reports, on the financial statements, I think on page 21, I see that there are staff debts that are even referred to as irrecoverable. Why irrecoverable? Because staff is there. You know, if it's still working, maybe it's no longer there. But it is stated as irrecoverable. Also, on the same breath, there was an increase on the bad debts that were written off from the previous financial year to this financial year. Maybe if you could give some light on that. On page, I think, 209, there's too much use of monies for facilities, venues and facilities. which is about 11 million. If we could get some further information of that. Well, I see there is a drop on the use of consultants from 89 to 63. But can it do better, far more better than that on consultants, and specifically if you could add some meat on what really type of consultants do you employ that are 63 that use so much. Just a clarification on page 208 about non-pensionable allowances that are 62 million. The other one will be your financial performance, CFO, always ends with a surplus. It seems to make you comfortable. Surplus of so much, do you reconcile it with the plan that you are supposed to spend it? But at the same time, you end with a surplus, and which means something hasn't been done. How do we correct that? Hey, I'll leave the others. This will be my last round.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Honorable Chair. I think I should also express my sentiments on the keen audit that the department got. I think it's one of the five audits that the AG said they are performing quite well. Nationally, only five departments have got clean audits. I hope this is one of them. Thank you, Chair. Coming to my question, Chairperson, just to add on the last questions asked by Honorable Nyambi and the committee on the workshops, that you targeted 19, 9, but you got 29. My question is not the number of workshops you got, but the quality of the workshops. Did you get the required results of the workshops? In other words, after your workshop, did you get people applying, did you get people coming to business? This is what we got from the workshop, and improve the lives of the people. My second question is, I'll beg your indulgence, I've got quite a few questions. It's on your mineral resource. The DDG said that you promoted 55% of your staff, if I'm not mistaken, if I heard you right. Now, my question is, of those promoted, at what level were they promoted? Or rather, what's the percentage for new intake? I understand if you promote somebody, then there must be somebody getting his position or her position. And as you promote people, they go up the ladder. You have to also feed in at the bottom of the ladder. How many people did you hire the entry level? At what qualifications? My second question is on mineral regulations. You said in a report that in KZN you train people who were ex-miners in order to combat illegal mining. My question is, what skills were those people trained on, and what impact did they have on illegal mining? And what are you doing in other areas like Welcome, Barberton, Limpopo, where there's illegal mining? Do you intend to have such a training? If not, why not? My second question is still on minerals regulations. It's on National Mining Promotion System. You've got the Council of Geosciences that is compiling information on daily basis on mineral sources in South Africa and dispersing to the public. Now, my question is, when issuing your prospecting rights and your mining rights, are you in contact with the GCS, the Council of Geosciences, so that they update their information as well on their data? Because a lot of people go to GCIS or GCS to get geological information and to get which farms are prospecting, which are not prospecting, in order for them to prospect or to also apply for mining rights. I want to find out, are you communicating with SGCS on those on that information so that there's no duplication of the prospecting or mining rights? Also on the mining processing rights, according to your report, you've actually issued 186 prospecting rights. there's no backlog, as you said. Now my question is, of these 186 prospecting rights, how many have been converted to mining rights? And if they're converted to mining rights, how many mines are now, you know, functioning or are a success? The last question on this mineral regulation program, Chairperson, is on the 119 inspections conducted about the mining charter. we were informed when we were briefed on on the mining charter and mineral beneficiation, that the department is still conducting a survey on the impact of the mining charter and also of those people that they were given, or rather those mines that are PEE, whether are they compliant, and whether those PEEs are not the hollow shares, or to find that our people are LFC sitting with the high huge tax bill and so forth. My question is on these 1919 inspections, how many mines or how many did comply and how many did not comply, and what will be your remedial action? Coming to the health, Chairperson. Earlier in the year, when we were at a briefing on the mine health inspections by Honorable Caesar, we informed that actually most of the accidents on the mines, as I know, they happen through due to tremming. There's little that accidents happen due to fall of ground, but it's due to tremming. However, we are also informed that most of the deaths occur actually outside the mines after the people have disengaged from the mine, of which is due to respiratory illnesses. As shown on the graph, they are very high. Now, my question is, as the department is aware that most deaths occur from the labor sending areas where people have long disengaged from the mine or they've long separated from the mine, what policy initiatives do you think or do you have or do you intend putting in place so that we curb those deaths from labor sending areas, or the mines actually to some extent take responsibility for all those deaths at the labor sending areas, because people die long after they've separated from the mines, and of which, in my view, they something they contracted from the mines. My second question on that issue, Chair, is on the the department says that you've set yourself a target of 1 month to respond to a public complaint on environmental issues. My question is, do you communicate with other departments as far as this issue is concerned? My asking this really is the reason is that given an example, I've got an issue in Allen Ridge. It's a former mining area. It's now it was under promoted. I think China is going to buy that. It was formerly under Harmony and previously under Anglo Val. We've got a slime dam there, or a dam there that is very hazardous to the community around, of which in winter it's very dry and windy due to dust that is coming there. It's got silicone and reactive, and in summer it's very stinky. You can't take people around there, they've already developed asthma. I've written 2 letters to the Deputy Minister and the Minister of Environmental Affairs for the past 2 years, no response, nothing. Now, my question is that, do you interact with other departments so that we can take remedial action on that slime dam, on that dam? On mineral policy, I've just got 2 questions, Chairperson, if not 3. And this is my last 2.
just before you proceed with the questions, I think what we're going to do, DG, is that after the question has been asked now, and you can just answer very critical issues and the others, we can get that commitment from you within 14 or 7 days. To make it 7 days, we can get the others' answers in writing. Is that fine with the members?
Yes,
sir. Is that all right? Good. All the questions, in the answers in writing, and the DG can just do the closing remarks from the bottom side after the questioning session. And within 7 days, we'll get all the answers in writing. Is that fine with the,
no.
with the members? Honorable Lee?
Jim, yes, I agree with that, but the difficulty with that is that very often there are follow-up questions which we won't be able to deal with unless they come back to see us again. That's fine, we can call them back.
Yeah. No, the department, as Honourable Camara has rightly said, the DG and his department are very willing to always assist the committee, so they love Cape Town also as well. Honorable Nguni, you can proceed.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think the MPDRA, the 30, I don't quite remember which year, by that year, at least 26% of the mining, or rather of all the mine, in the mining area, or the mining industry, needs to belong to historically disadvantaged individuals. I just want to find out what is the department doing for aspiring entrepreneurs or individuals, these HDIs, to ensure that they actually got the 26% stake. And what are the main constraints as far as this is concerned? I know there are financial constraints and other things, but what are the main constraints for HDIs to get 26% stake in mining? My second last question, Chair, is on pollution of the area by the mining. You mentioned the wastewater treatment basin, of which is mainly exploited for its gold mineral content. And silver, pyrite, and uranium are byproducts. Now, the result is that when the mine closes down, you find that the area is polluted with radioactive substances, is polluted with acidic water from the slime dams, from the pyrite, and from the silica that is removed from the mines. Now, in all these areas, there's also a lot of holes around, especially around Welcome, around the old Treaty Fountain, around the Springs area. You go to Barberton, you go to Wheatbank, which is quite a coal mine. There's a lot of stinking around. Now, my question is, what is the department's strategy in order to rehabilitate these areas, especially where you find that there's acidic water and there's this dust which is highly laden with silicon? What is the strategy to rehabilitate these areas? If there's no strategy, what are you planning to do? My last question, sir, is on the issue that we briefly informed from the beneficiation briefing that MinTech actually lost, or rather did a research for over years that over $500 million was spent on it. But when the last portion is supposed to finish the study, it was short of $80 million. I think China came in and gave MinTech the $80 million. And as such, now they've got the, I wouldn't say the patent, but the rights to form that if it's a steel alloy. For 10 years, it should belong to China before it comes to South Africa. Why did you leave that research to go to China just when it's about to finish? After we spent $500 million, just we left it there, only $80 million to finish the study. Why did the department let it go? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nguni, Honorable Lee.
Jim, thank you very much. Apologize for my voice. I hope I'll feel better later on today. Chairman, it's great to join your committee. Thank you very much. It's my first meeting here, and as a consequence, I'm probably not well versed with the work of the committee and the work that's been done in the last few months. So I may ask questions which
answers are in the report, which I've only just received, and however it's very good. So if that is the case, I apologize. Chairman, sometimes during the presentation, I've battled a little bit with the presentation. Sometimes you haven't followed your presentation, sometimes we haven't even had copies of your presentation. So I've battled a little bit with them. They are extensive, and that's great, but somewhere in the presentation, there was talk of a uranium and a coal regulation or something, policy that had been developed or had been completed. It's completed. Yes, it was used. When can we see a copy of that? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm looking, I'm kind of expecting an immediate answer, which is wrong. I shouldn't be doing that, but I'd like to see a copy of that. The transfers amounted to 3.7 million in the next billion. I'm intrigued that the transfers under Annex D include some transfers to Etegwini Municipality, and yet we have a separate line item under Annex A, 1A and 1B for Municipality. Why is Etegwini getting two bites or being listed under the public corporation and private enterprises? And then Eskom is also listed twice. It's on an extra 1D. 1.4 billion, then plus another 78 billion. What was the purpose of that transfer to Eskom, or those transfers to Eskom? Because they get other money from other areas as well. There's a line item in the utilization of funds, and I can't find it in the annual report, so it might well be detailed in the annual report, but there's 593 million, which was 1,000. The report doesn't show, it's probably 1,000. So 593,000 in thefts and losses. And I'd like to see detail of that, and what were the actions taken on that one. And then to get to my own province, in this report here, the Mineral Regulation Branch, there's reports, and I think it's been touched on by Honorable Nguni in terms of illegal mining, but it refers to Oswezweni, which is in my constituency, and I know that there has been illegal coal mining taking place in Oswezweni. But I'd like to have more detail of what's been done in that area, it forms that an integral part of the economy of that area, even though it's illegal, and so one's got to deal with it fairly sensitively. Is it on page 212 of the report, there's a debt write-off of other debts of 437,000. There's no note next to it. What debt would the department have which it wrote off during that particular year? Chairman, thank you. I think that's all. I'm sorry, DG. I'm not speaking into the mic. I think speak into the mic is a frequent thing you hear, and I'm not doing it. On page 212, there's bad debts, other bad debts, or any bad debts. But there's 437,000 called other, and then there's government garage and car rental access. I mean, why is the government garage not paying its debt? Why do we have to write it off in your department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. President. Most of my questions have been covered. And I think there's only one question which I'd like to ask is related to the mine safety, my health and the safety inspector. Okay. In your report here, on your slide here, which is on the page number 8, the course of a date is only showing the figure in between of 2003 to 2007. So I wonder if there is any further data that will be related for 2008. Give us a better picture, okay. And follow to that, I just want to know, in this report here, does that including the number of injuries or the deaths from this illegal miner stock? I'd like to know, you know, that the department has any of a future plan or the joint initiative with the Department of the Police, you know, to begin with some story like this Zama Zama story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chen. Honorable Van Lingen.
Mr. Chair, being the last person,
a
lot of my thunder has been stolen. But let me add to the accolade of appreciation to a good audit. That's fantastic. I have the same problem as Honorable Lee with the gentleman's presentation, and I need to know the mining charter report, whether we could see a copy of that or is it not possible. Then, I'm sure
Honorable Van Lingen, I know you come from the Eastern Cape, but use your mic, please.
They don't have electricity there.
Oh. Well, we won't go into that debate now.
You know, this is a typical thing of interference. All you could have done is just send somebody to the I need to know the list of the names of, a list of the names of the mines that are currently not complying with environmental regulations. And those that have closed that haven't done the social bit. So I think we can do it on both fields, the environmental bit and the social bit on open and closed mines. Then we know where we are, because those are obviously issues that we must look for and address. 17% stock turnover to me sounds terribly high. I'm really worried about that. It's almost as bad as doctors and nurses. It's 20%, so I think that's very high, and maybe we can get an explanation for that. And then my friend Honorable Chen touched on the illegal mining thing. Do you have a report on this? Is it available for us to study? Thank you.
Thank you very much. See that there was only one round of questions. Thank you, members, for your indulgence in that. EG, I've just got two. First of all, let me also say a joint of chorus of congratulating you and the department. You know, it's not always that you are found in our young democracy, department under one teacher that could keep up the standards for 4 years. But congratulations on that, DJ. You've got a wonderful staff, and it's sorry that some of your staff are leaving for energy and all that. I was saying to the energy sector, I think it was last week, that if you are moving now away, please keep the discipline. Already we could see there that they faltered in discipline, but we'll leave that for another debate, because they are not under the watchful eye of Advocate Sandile anymore. So, but DG, you know, of the SMMEs sector in support for the small-scale mining and beneficiating project, we would like to find out where are these SMMEs located, on what scale, and how small are these small-scale mining and their current capacity and their potential. The other thing, I know there's a report on the minister has in the house in the National Council of Provinces talked about the illegal mining. We know that the task team has met, as the task team reported back to the minister, yourself, the political office bearers, or to DMR already, what progress has been made, and that issue. You know, this committee would have gone on an oversight visit, due to the programs of Parliament, we couldn't. But we are still planning that oversight visit to various provinces, particularly the Northern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KZN, to look at Northwest, to look at mining houses that does not comply with the social and labor responsibilities or plans. We have found out there's been studies that have been made in the Northern Cape Research, and also from our own members of the committee that reside in these areas, come back to us and say, please, let's go there and talk to these mining houses, because none of them has ever complied. They've promised, and it was just as promises. So if you want to, first of all, thank you for the assistance that the department has already given us in terms under your leadership for getting that. But if you guys can just assist us in the mining house, specifically in Limpopo, the Kakuni district and around, because the National Council of Provinces, the full house, is going there next year, taking Parliament to the people. So we want to do that oversight visit. And the Northern Cape, specifically, what are the criteria or what are the social and labor responsibilities that these mine houses have set out? If we can get that also, what's the answer, CD? I think we'll stop at that, DJ, and we'll give you in the next few minutes that we've got, we'll give you the last word, and then, because there is some other meeting that is also pressing on us, and 2 o'clock there is the National Assembly sitting with the MC, BPS, and I think you will also want to go there to find out how much money are you still getting and all that. Over to you, Dini.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members, let me first thank you for your very kind words indeed. You know, in my 12 years as the Director General of this department, I think it's the first committee that has ever showered me with such kind words, ever. And I must thank you for that. And coming now to the issues of your praise, I think, Chairperson, let me agree with the approach that has just been adopted right now. So what we'll do, we'll basically have recorded some of the questions that have been raised here. I don't want to waste your time and try to even respond to some of them, precisely because I don't know what the consequence of that may be, because the nice mood may end up changing. because you may begin to say that, why do you think that those are important? Why are you only responding to those? We want answers on all of them. So in order for me to avoid that, honorable members, I think let me not answer any of the questions, but safe to say that so far as the review of the charter is concerned, what we have now done, we have collated the information, and we are currently analyzing the information, and the intention is to take it to cabinet once we have done that, and then the cabinet then will make it public. I again don't want to offend my bosses. My trick for survival all these years has been that to make it a point that whatever I do is never career limiting. So I don't want, therefore, to start saying things that my bosses have not yet seen there. Let them be the ones who will then be articulating the report. Same as with the uranium and coal strategy. Because you'll recall, honorable members, that at some stage we really had some crisis insofar as coal is concerned. When we had those brownouts and the blackouts, one of the reasons was the fact that we didn't have the feedstock. South Africa didn't have, Eskom didn't have coal. They didn't have access to coal. And yet South Africa is one of the countries that produce large volumes of coal because the companies were exporting it when the South African economy was suffering. So it is in that spirit then that we decided to say, what is it that we can do in order for us to ensure that the natural resources that belong to this country get used for the purposes of boosting the economy of this country? So it is in that context then that we are developing the uranium and the coal strategy. We'll also be submitting them to cabinet. And once we have submitted them to cabinet, we will indeed brief you on the contents thereof. You know, I'm so tempted to say something about the challenges relating to the BEE that we have asked about. Why is it that we are not getting to this 26%? What are the challenges that we are encountering there? You know, it's very interesting because the results really indicate that the problem is not only with the established companies. The problems are also with the BEE companies. The BEEs, some of the BEEs are used to fraud. They enter into deals that are not genuine. You know, you give people licenses and they say, the other question that you asked about how many of these licenses have graduated to mining rights, or how many mines have been created. Indeed, you know, the answer that we'll be bringing back will be shocking to you, because we'll be telling you that, you know, there are already some of the people that we granted license who are currently trying to sell those rights. And that's why we then had in the law the provisions of Section 11, which say that for you to be able to sell, to on-sell the mining right that you have, you have to come back to the department so that we can indeed determine whether that is indeed a fit and a proper person who will be receiving that license. It's precisely because of that problem. The reason why I thought that I must raise this is because in the newspapers yesterday, I'm sure you might have seen, that there was a comment on this Section 11 as to people questioning why is it important, important for people who are selling their rights to come back to government in order for them to get an approval for them to be able to. It's because we are trying to prevent the same kind of a problem that we are currently encountering. And it's going to be a very interesting reading. Your charter review is going to make a very, very interesting reading for you. And I must tell you that you have your work cut out for you for next year, because there is definitely going to be a need for you to revisit the contents of the law so that you can indeed plug all these gaps that have been created, which we have established through the experience that we have had in the processing of applications as well as the review of the charter itself. Chairperson, I think let me stop right there before I get excited again and start answering a lot of other questions.
So thank you very much, DG. I think from the committee side, we just want to say wish you well, you and your family, all of you and your family. I'm not sure whether you are appearing before the committee again. Sister Grace? Yeah, with the presidential order? Yeah. The presidential order, that's the question I wanted to ask. That slipped my mind. DG, I don't know, I think I've read somewhere that the presidential orders are not before cabinet yet, or it's not ready yet. Is it out?
We can provide you with a report.
Yeah, no, I think the department are being invited to address the committee on the presidential order. Okay, but from our side, members, are there any burning issues or burning stuff that will burn you out till we see the DG again and the department again, or any of the members of the department? Nothing that will kill you or burn you? Nothing? Okay.
Try not to burn the coal.
Well, members from my side, thank you very much for attending. And I think the other business that we wanted to discuss, we'll discuss it tomorrow if the chairperson of Trade and International Relationship will allow us. With that, thank you, Chair. Department, DG, you and your team, well, go well, and keep up the good work. We are proud to, you know, our view as a committee on in terms of oversight and in terms of department appearing before the committee is to give credit where credit is due. To stay straight in one another's face and space where we see problems. We are not just department bashing. I don't think that is good in the nature of building and in the nature of working together, because our goals are the same. We need to deliver, and we stand in our constitutional right in terms of oversight functions and our oversight responsibility. And as this is a department that I think that is responsible for 50% of GDP of the country, it is a delicate department, and you have handled it very well. I wish some of the members of the committee could have attended the strategic planning workshop to see how vibrant these guys are. Even difficult times, they are very vibrant, smiling. Even when the DG and the minister lashes them, they are still disciplined and they participate. But go well, and all of the best for every one of you, and God bless. Have a safe journey, and look after your families, and remember what you do in life. Do it well. Don't overdo it, but just do it over. Thank you very much. This meeting stands to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not too sure that 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 I'm